Skull and Evert present This Week in Horror.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Ifrit, I think.
And I'm Sickle, and we're Sickle and Ifrit. We're the Unhallowed Reviewers. You have forgotten your name before. It's a little embarrassing.
When all you do is drive a bus and watch movies, you don't really remember lots. There's nothing to remember. Like, it's not like we're meeting new people all the time, you know? And then we have to, like, introduce ourselves. Like, it's like, you know, when you hit, like, 24, you just stop caring about how old you are.
Yeah, and like also, it's not like you're a taxi driver. You're not like Jamie Foxx from Collateral, where you like know all the best routes through L.A. Like you know you're a bus driver. You're just running the same routes, man.
Yeah, deep cut with Collateral. That's true. There. So we're gonna talk about some stuff today. So let's start.
Lots of stuff.
Lots of interesting trailers. So coming out. So let's just talk about that. So an international trailer came out for Bloodshot, which completely changes like how you see the movie. Like.
This thing is going through like peaks and valleys. I can't pinpoint. Like the very first thing was that little tease of his face getting blown off, and you're like, "Oh, this looks awesome." And then the next trailer is like, "Look, Fast and the Furious with microbots," and you're like, "Oh, okay." And then this one, you're like, "Okay, now we're going back to a little bit of the darker direction." So which is it? And I don't know. I am gonna see it no matter what. I'm excited, but
yeah. And like this one, they showed off like this one. It was like more like superhero centric. They're like. Superheroes with a twist, and like there's a dude who has some mechanical arms, and apparently a lady whose breath is always cold, and a guy, and you know, then Bloodshot who can rearrange himself and stuff. But I don't know, at this point it's Vin Diesel, and I like Fast and the Furious enough that I'm just gonna see it.
Yeah, I've gotta be honest with you, in regards to metal arms guy who I like the design, I think it'll be fun for, you know, it's a good Bloodshot fight, but I don't need the, like, falling through an elevator shaft while they're punching each other and the big epic. Like, I really just need them on in a corridor just, like, duking it out. I'm getting kind of tired of the big, extravagant, like, the close combat, well choreographed, focusing on the choreography of it rather than the big set pieces.
Upgrade.
Yes, exactly. Upgrade, Winter Soldier as opposed to, like, any other Marvel movie, like, that close combat stuff is way more interesting to me.
I mean, I think this movie's not going to be that, so, like, I mean, I guess temper your expectations now, because, like, it's obviously going to be, a blockbuster, if you will. But we'll see if we get some good stuff out of it. I mean, I'm hoping that it's more visceral than they're making it out to be. Is it rated R?
I would assume so.
Okay, cool. Well,
but I don't know. They may have the same little workaround like they did with Dark Phoenix, where like it's an alien getting blown up, but even though it looks like a person, it's an alien.
Yeah.
So they may be able to make it PG-13 now.
Speaking of superheroes, the Morbius trailer came out, and I wasn't quite sure. So this is the series of events that came to me watching the Morbius trailer was there's a Morbius trailer coming out. Get ready, and then I forgot about it because they did that too early. And then people were like, new shot of Morbius from the Morbius trailer without the trailer coming out. And it was just that picture of Morbius Jared Leto looking back and he's like super vampirified, like Spider-Man, Amazing Spider-Man, Fox TV shows Morbius, you know?
Yeah.
In real life. And then I finally watched the trailer. So like I went through small peaks and valleys thing because I was like really excited for the trailer and I saw that picture and I was like, okay. I mean, he kind of looks a little bit CG'd for me. But I guess that's how it works now in superhero movies. And then I watched the trailer, and I was like, oh, this seems like it could be pretty interesting, especially if it's in the vein of introducing that kind of, like, more darker Marvel, like Blade and, like, stuff like that. It could be, like, Moon Knight. It could be really cool, I think.
Yeah, I definitely wasn't turned off by the trailer. I did think... this is just a failure on my part as a comic book fan... But I just didn't remember Morbius being, like, that bat-like. I didn't remember him being that bat-like. Like, it's probably because I'm thinking of the Spider-Man cartoon, where...
I mean, I don't remember the part where he was bat-like, but maybe I'll have to watch it again.
I just mean, like, all of his powers are bat-like. Like,
oh,
the sonar.
Like
the
bats. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, like, all of that stuff. I'm like, okay, and that's fine, because I'm not going to get mad at the... movie for pulling from the comics. I'm sure they didn't make those powers up. I'm sure that's what he did in the comics, but I was just kind of hoping it would be more of like what I remember from the Spider-Man comic is that he was more of like a very pale person that was forced to, like, suck the plasma out of people to live. And then he just made the decision to do that to bad people. And so, like, I've always thought of him more from, like, that perspective of just, like, I have this horrible condition and I'm going to try to use it for some level of good. As opposed to, like, I'm a crazy superhero that has, like, all these crazy powers.
And yeah, so, that's true.
And it's just a little bit too much Dracula for me. Like, it's basically Dracula Untold. Like,
I actually heard
somebody mention that. They were like, now I just want to go see Dracula Untold.
I'm still going to watch Morbius, I think, just because I wasn't interested in it as much. And then I saw the trailer and I was like, oh, this could be fun. But I'm really happy that Sony's taking a lead with, like, their whole, you know, like, anti-hero-verse kind of thing. Because they have Spider-Man, which is great. But even the Spider-Man movies are, like, kind of... they're unique, I think, and they're Marvel movies, obviously, but they have their own kind of spin on them, I guess, to me. I just really like that Sony is able to keep doing things with Marvel, and they're not doing what DC is doing and just kind of shitting the bed a lot. Now, I will say, I have been, like, power watching, like, DC Universe shows, like Doom Patrol and Titans, and I'm really liking those shows, and I don't know why DC just keeps doing really good shows and keeps shitting the bed with their movies, because, seriously, like, the DC shows are really good. Like, Arrow, they just finished, like, Crisis on Infinite Earth, and supposedly people are loving that, but, I mean, I don't know. I'm excited for Sony kind of embracing the whole anti-hero-verse kind of thing, so keep going, Sony. You do you.
Yeah, it could be a lot of fun. I'm curious to see where they're going with the Vulture little cameo.
Oh, yeah, me too. I was like... I went to look on IMDb at that, and it was like he was uncredited. Yeah, thank you. Sorry, I was like, did he say unedited? No, that's not what I meant. but yeah, he was uncredited, and that was kind of cool. I was like, oh man, maybe this is like a Sinister Six-y kind of thing, or I don't know, because like a lot of times the Sinister Six is just the six villains that they introduce first in the series, so it doesn't always have to be the same. But anyway. I think it can be fun. And again, it's Marvel movies. I'm going to spend money on them.
That makes it kind of confusing for me, because then it's like... because to me, like... I mean, at least a lot of people were kind of like comparing Morbius to Venom. And with good reason, I think. And then, mm-hmm. like, you have... But then you have Vulture showing up in the Morbius movie, but the Venom movie was almost exclusively by itself. It's like, yeah. So is Venom going to be part of this or not? Because, yeah. like, part of the... like. We've discussed this before. Like, I liked the movie a lot, but I do feel like a part of Venom is lost when he doesn't have the connection with Spider-Man, because that's part of the psychosis of that whole situation, is that the symbiote, like, feels rejected by Peter Parker.
That's true, but having been reading a lot of just Venom standalone comics, I kind of think that Venom is better without Spider-Man, because it has a place to grow away from just being kind of like that Spider-Verse anti-hero. And I'm not saying that affects the origin story. I'm just like, I don't care as much about the origin story because of that, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
That's fair. I do think it would be a little bit awkward, though, to have him come back in with Spider-Man, and then but Spider-Man have not been a part of his origin. It's going to be kind of weird.
Well, maybe they just redo it, and like the Venom symbiote meets Spider-Man and is like, oh dude, let's do that. And so even at one point in the Venom comic, even like that, like just there's Absolute Carnage thing I talked about a while ago just finished,
yeah,
and like just like Eddie Brock didn't want to do something, and so Venom was like, F this, we gotta get a better host, and jumps onto Spider-Man again. And it's like, you know, so that whole mentality of like stronger host thing could be a thing where like maybe Brock gets a conscience more, or does something where he doesn't want to be associated with Venom at first, and then has to stop Venom from Spider-Maning, or I don't know. There's just a bunch of ways they could take it that I think I'm willing to let them, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I'm all for it. I mean, like, I feel like Venom was flawed in quite a few ways, but I also think that overall it was a lot of fun.
I actually do want to watch it again, but I'll talk about that another time. Another movie that wasn't so fun when we watched the trailer was this movie Cupid. And if you type in Cupid trailer, look for the 2021, and just watch it, and it, like, for the first, like, 30 seconds, I was like, oh, this could, this is, this, oh, cool, like, let's see where this goes. And then after that, I was just like, what on earth is this? And then Sickle enlightened me, so why don't you tell the fans, like, what it's supposed to be and what's going on with this trailer.
So, I guess it was getting, like, pushed around marketing-wise as, like, a Grindhouse movie, and I feel like Ifrit nailed it, like, verbatim, like, exactly what I was thinking, which was just, like, making a crappy movie and then just calling it Grindhouse does not make it Grindhouse. Like, if you're not, it doesn't, it's not, calling it a Grindhouse movie isn't an excuse to do a bad job. And it just looks like garbage. But
Yeah. And I think, I mean, unless you want to say more, I'm not excited for that movie at all. And I feel like they, like, after watching those Krampus movies, the things that I saw in that trailer made me feel like that's what I was getting, and I have no desire to see this movie.
I don't blame you. Yep, we can move on.
So, I know that this Countdown movie has been bumping around a while, because I thought I saw a trailer for it, like, 4 months ago or something, but this trailer called of Countdown, this movie called Countdown, it's about, like, a phone app that tells you when you're gonna die, and everyone's like, wait, no, I don't have 25 years to live? Shit. Like, I only have 30 minutes? This sucks. And then they end up dying. So, like, everyone's like, oh my god, it's an app that kills you. The thing that got me going, though, was that they seem to have a decent amount of practical effects in this movie about a phone app killing you. Because, like, the thing that they're giving away in the trailer that you see a lot of is, like, these really creepy hands and, like, these kind of, like, shadowed bodies. And they all are practical, if I'm recalling correctly. Or the majority of them are. And so I was like, I'm more than willing to give a crappy premise a shot if it's willing to flash its practical effects in the trailer, you know?
Yeah, I don't know if it's enough for me, because that premise is really stupid.
It's kind of like, yeah, sure.
It's very derivative. I can't handle it. It's just like a ripoff of, like...
I mean, I'm not going to, like, pay to see it, but I'm going to see it eventually.
Anything, honestly, like, I mean, as much as I say, like, I hate a lot of, like, poorly made mainstream horror, like Slender Man, like stuff that just goes to theaters to make a quick buck, like that kind of stuff. As much as I hate it, and I talk down about it all the time, even if I didn't go to theaters to watch it, if it pops up on Netflix, I'm watching it. Because I want to see. I want to see how bad it was, or I want
to
see it.
You have the movie pass, so you can go see this movie for basically free. So you should go see it, because I have to pay for it.
It's true. And I probably, I don't know, isn't it already out? I think it's, I'm pretty sure I saw it on Vudu. I'm pretty sure I saw it on Vudu as, like, it's a still in theaters thing, but I could rent it digitally, so.
Yeah, so, and that's why I got confused, because I was like, I'm sure this movie's already out, but I keep seeing stuff about it, so. I don't know. Again, I would just beg you to go look, or to keep in mind, nowadays, stuff where you see practical effects in a trailer, and they're not Cupid, right? Where it's not, like, stupid. And you're like, just think about that, because I think it's happening a lot less, and I think that's, like, kind of a flex, you know? Where you're like, we're comfortable showing this flex, and, you know, come see our movie. And I think that could sell me on it. On movies in general, not necessarily a certain movie, but... Like, I mean, if you're ballsy enough to think that your practical effects are good and you put them in a trailer and I don't hate them, like, I kind of got to give you props for that, because not a lot of people are doing that nowadays.
Yeah, I mean, like, I will always respect practical effects in any attempt you take.
So, I also saw this trailer called I See You, and when I watch trailers, it's not with as much depth as Sickle watches them. So, these trailers, these are for movies that have, like, already come out and they're, like, 5 years old, but... You know, I do my best. This one's called I See You, and it's a movie about a girl who ends up, like, going out for the first time in a long time and gets, like, roofied and kidnapped into this house with a bunch of other girls that are being basically, like, controlled by this guy into acting and being his sister. And it just looked like... It looked kind of interesting, like, not crazy, but definitely... like Cam or something like that, where it's like a not a novel premise, not super novel, but an interesting take on it and maybe kind of fun. But the stuff it was saying, it was like, because it would show some of the movie and it would, like, flash to a comment from, like, a really popular, like, you know, horror review site, and one of them was like impossible to predict, and I was like, what? Like, what? What? Like, is it going to be impossible to predict? Maybe I'm thinking of, now I'm sorry, I said what three times because I think I might be thinking of the wrong movie now, because I saw that trailer and now I'm like, oh no, I'm sorry, retract everything I just said. That was a whole other movie that I don't actually remember the name of. But I See You is as a movie about this like killing that happens in this small town. This is totally nonsense now because I just presented an entire movie with this trailer and it's not the right movie. But I'm sorry. I'll finish this in a second, everybody. I'm sorry you have to listen. It's this like this kid goes missing in this town and they can't find his body. And then another kid starts to get abused and stuff like that, and it's supposed to be like a thriller because you can't tell who kidnapped this kid and where he's at, and then the family seems to be involved somehow. And I'm like, impossible to predict. Like, most of the time people say that, it's like one of the selling tactics, right?
Yeah.
It's like what you put on a movie and you're like, the producers of blah, blah, blah. And it's like, okay, impossible to predict. Means that if you're, I feel like it means if you're savvy, you know it in the first 5 seconds.
I've got to be honest with you. I feel like I got distracted by the first movie you're talking about because I think I saw it.
Right?
Well, I think I saw that. Isn't it where she's like agoraphobic?
She's in a cheerleader outfit at a lot of the movie.
Never mind. Yeah, nope. Okay.
But anyway, let's move on to something that's less nonsensical. Sorry about that, everybody. Sorry about that. But I was actually forced to see the Antlers trailer when I watched The Grudge, so...
Okay, this is what I want to hear. Okay, I want to hear this.
And so we'll talk about The Grudge in a second, because we have very conflicting views on The Grudge, but the Antlers trailer, I mean, I'm obviously excited for it still, but I'm hoping that I didn't just see the movie, you know?
Yeah, like, you're catching parts of that. I can see what you mean by that, yeah.
Yeah, and so, like, I'm still gonna see it, but I'm kind of like, oh, man, I hope I didn't see the whole thing already.
Yeah, it definitely, there are definitely some scenes in it where you're like, this looks like the final act, and I don't know.
The story going on, where you're like, it basically tells you the entire story in that trailer. Unless there's something crazy that happens, I feel like I know what's gonna happen in that movie already.
Yeah, so, funny, because I love the story, I love the idea, so... Yeah. I do understand that, like, the mystery can be lost a little bit. And I don't know if I mentioned this to you, but I remember last year, the two movies that impressed me the most were two that I just happened to not watch a trailer for. And that was, I didn't watch anything for Daniel Isn't Real before I saw it. And on the request of everybody that I talked to who fervently said, do not watch anything about it, just go watch the movie, which is The Perfection. And I was really impressed by both of those movies, and I don't know how much of it was because I went in blind, but I'm sure it helped. And
I'm
so
sure we
can understand.
Have like a whole 30-minute conversation about how trailers ruin things, but
yeah, I can't help it though.
Yeah, neither can I. So I'm in the same boat. But let's move on from trailers since we spent over half the podcast talking about trailers.
Woo!
And talk about the two movies, three movies we saw, but two of them that we saw in theaters. Unless you saw The Martians in theaters.
Oh, no.
But we both saw The Grudge and Underwater. Let's talk about Underwater first, because I think we both liked Underwater.
Yes. I enjoyed it quite a bit. I feel like it was... it didn't do anything incredible, but it also did nothing bad. And I think that I referred to it as, like, a B-plus grade across the board. But I think that that's actually a really good thing, because most movies of that kind of caliber, of like that budget and that kind of a release date where like nobody's really pushing it, it's clearly going to do bad in the box office, usually those movies are like C across the board with like 1A. Mm-hmm. But this was like really solid across the board. Like the acting was good, the effects were good, the script was decent, the story was, you know... derivative but fun, and like, so you're just like, everything was just like, I'm having a good time with this, like, this is great.
Yeah, it kind of like, I mean, I'm not, you're right, I think the story was derivative. It's basically like any sci-fi movie where they're in a scenario where humans can't live outside the domicile they're in, life, you know, I can't think of any of them now, of course.
Alien, but like the Abyss.
The Abyss.
Yeah.
Sphere, even, kind of.
Like, yeah.
The Thing. It's stuff like that where you have these very, like... But I don't care. Like, to me, that is fine. Like, it's like in a slasher movie when you know that, like, more than 80, 90% of the people are going to die. Like, it's just part of that kind of genre, I think. You know? To have, like, a derivative environmental-based situation. And to me, like, I'm not saying that you said this either, because I think that you were like, B-plus is good. Like, you can't really do much. Like, you have to set up the premise, and that's that. That's what it is, right?
Yeah.
And so, like, of course, an underwater spoiler at a time, I guess, if you guys were, you know, trying to see if you could get through this whole thing without spoilers, which we can't, so... they work for a company who has manufactured a gigantic drill that drills into the earth that's 7 miles underneath the water. Turns out, humans, weak humans, can't survive in 7 miles underneath the water. So, you know, there you go. They're in a station. The station starts to break down for some reason. They have to get to a place where they can get out, where there's escape pods, basically. So, it's not underwater, it's in space. It doesn't matter, right? They're getting to escape pods and trying to find a way out. That's the whole, like, main MacGuffin of the movie, is, like, to try to get away and back up to the surface. Think that's fair?
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's a very familiar premise. I mean, I feel like the three movies that come to mind where people will be like, oh, you know, hardcore horror fans will be like, oh, okay, so that's, like, The Abyss, that's, like, Deep Star 6, that's, like, Leviathan. It's like, okay, yep, you nailed it.
Yeah, and then the other part that comes in is, like, they're getting basically slowly, they're getting, like, harassed by something. Like, nobody knows what it is at first, and, like, they start finding dead bodies, and they start, like, experiencing these crazy things.
And they find a baby.
About, like, a third of the way through the movie, which I thought was, I mean, so, to be fair, this movie starts, like, there is absolutely no ramp-up time. It's, like...
Other than a pointless monologue that I don't really think the movie needed, but that's...
I don't even remember it, so that's how little it meant, I think, the whole movie. Because basically in the first, like, 5 minutes, like, the movie has already started. Like, the station is falling apart and people are dying, and you're like, okay, it's on, I guess we're going, and we're going. Isn't there supposed to be some kind of buzzer? Okay. and then, like, maybe a third of the way through the movie, you start getting, like, creature experiences. And now, I will say the first, like, half of the creature experiences are, like, flashy and kind of, like, hard to see. But I think they did a good job with them.
Yeah, I feel like there, if I were to say that there was something that was, like, slightly weak, the CG's a little weak for them. But, like, not bad, because I think that they also take advantage of the dark environment to use them well. I agree with you about this. About the start, like, without the monologue, which I don't think was necessary for the plot, it does just, like, throw you in. And I think the way that I've been describing it to people is, like, take the 2-hour runtime-ish, I can't remember exactly, but the 2-hour runtime of Alien, and just take off that first half hour of build and atmosphere. And I love that build and atmosphere in Alien, so I'm not taking it away from that. And I'm not saying that Underwater couldn't have benefited from that as well, but I thought it was awesome. Like, it still was, like, really cool that they're like, we're not going to waste any time on this. Let's get to the survival part, and we'll introduce the creatures in survival mode. Like, we'll just get you into survival mode first.
And things scale. Like, you don't just get, like, small creatures like an alien, right? What I thought was cool about this is it scales kind of like The Thing-ish, but even more, where, like, it starts small. Actually, The Thing doesn't start small. Never mind. It starts really small and goes really big. And I thought that was the coolest part, because by the end of the movie, like, stakes are pretty intense, right? Like,
yeah.
Yeah, so, and I, again, like I say, every time I see a good movie that I like, very Lovecraftian. So.
Yep.
I think that's where I'm going to leave that, though, as far as, like, what I'm going to say, so.
Yeah, I feel like if I were to nitpick one thing, it's the bookending of the monologue. Like, didn't want that. And the CG was just a little bit on the weaker side, not terrible and not, like, really, like, distracting or anything, but just a little bit of the weaker side. But, you know, that happens with the budget. But I do want to say, I got to point this out, by far, I seriously sat back and thought about it, and I was like, I cannot think of a movie that had better designed and created suits.
I know. I was thinking about that. their suits are so awesome, and they're in them the whole time. Yeah.
Yes.
Anyway, one more thing I was going to say, actually, is hardcore Deep Rising vibes, except for, like, there's a lot more humor in Deep Rising.
And, well, yeah, like, way more. Yeah.
But this movie is, like, it's not this, it's like an ancestral, like, predecessor, or an ancestral, like, relation to Deep Rising. I mean, it's kind of cool in the scale and how it escalates. It's set in the water. Like, you only get pieces at first, and then you get the whole thing. The people there, I mean, they're not trying to rob the station, but, like, there's, like, internal conflict between the people involved. And so, I don't know, it was really cool. I'd say go see Underwater. Go pay it to see Underwater.
But I really did, speaking of, like, the internal conflict, like, but also, nobody was an idiot. And that was one of the cool things about Life, was that, like, when you're watching Life, you're like, oh, holy crap, these scientists are, like, smart and working together. And, like, you know, there's that scene where Ryan Reynolds gets locked inside the room with the alien. Mm-hmm. And, like, you see his, like, acknowledgement, like, hey, you guys did the right thing. Like, I didn't get out in time. Like, and yeah. So it was just, and, like, Underwater's the same thing. It's refreshing to have characters that are, like, building drama and tension without screaming at each other. And yeah. I really appreciate that
and
about
the
that
growth
movie.
Too. Like seeing the characters grow. I mean, especially Kristen Stewart's character, but the other one. Like seeing her change over the movie and become like a stronger person. Also, I will say the last two movies I've seen Kristen Stewart in have totally made up for any Twilight stuff because I've really, really liked her acting in both of them.
What was the other
Angels
one?
And Charlie's Angels.
Okay.
I like that movie a lot.
Because there was that one that she did called Personal Shopper. Which she does. She's okay in that. I feel like the movie's extremely slow. Personal Shopper sounds like a like rom-com, but it's not. It's like a horror drama, but way more on the drama side.
You wouldn't have brought it up if it was a rom-com.
Yeah, of course. But like it does, like you hear that title and it just the synopsis does not add up. But it didn't really strike me as like this big. I don't know, fantastic movie that a lot of people thought it was, but I don't know. It was, she did pretty good in it.
Yeah. Do you want to try to talk about The Grudge in a few minutes? You think we got time?
Yeah, let's get this over with.
Okay. It's going to be a grudge match.
So I can't believe you said that.
Things I didn't notice before I watched The Grudge that I saw after. I didn't realize it was produced by the same people that did Evil Dead movie, which I loved, and that's about it. So the way that Sickle prefaced this movie to me last time on the podcast, and you can go back and listen to it because I think he said it, was all of the raw rating stuff was done in post. And
yes.
So that set me off. I was like, cool. That sounds like a really cool premise. Like to look at a movie and try to figure out where the like rated R was in post. I didn't notice anything at all that would have been done in post to make that movie rated R.
I can totally point it all out to you.
Go for it.
So the scene with the car and you see the corpse in the car, that is PG-13 level. But her crashing and then it's showing CG arms breaking is R level violence that they threw in after the fact. Like they could have just shown her crash into the tree and you're still at PG-13. But by adding the CG arms breaking, oh, suddenly it's R violence. And then the same thing with what's-her-face jumping off the stairwell. She smacks into the pavement. If you had not shown her CG body smack into the pavement and blood everywhere, still PG-13. But you had to show the post scene, in a post-production scene, of her CG body smacking into the pavement. So now you've got an R-level level
of
violence.
So the scene that I thought was very indicative of R-level that may or may not have been done post, it looked more deliberate than post-production, was the scene with the pregnant wife getting killed, where like the kitchen is just covered in blood and she's like dead on the floor. Like, I don't necessarily think that couldn't have been done in post, but it was shot, you know? That scene was shot.
But it's cut. But it cuts away for the actual murder.
Yeah, I'll say that too. They don't show a lot of straight up murder in that movie.
And I'll just, like, I'm not saying that this isn't a very superficial way to look at it, but, like, if you're going to take, in my personal opinion, the logical step of taking a PG-13 ghost movie where you never see the kills, you always see the aftermath, in the PG-13 version, the whole point of making that R is you now get to see what Kyoko does to people. That's the way...
But it was not about Kyoko. Like, that's
which
thing.
Is even more frustrating.
No,
because
I disagree.
None of the...
Actually,
none. I don't find any of those other spirits any remotely as scary as Kyoko was. Like, and by the way, I apologize if I'm not pronouncing her name correctly.
Yeah.
But I just thought that there was the most generic, like... black mouth, black eyes, like, faces ever. And, like, the Kyoko thing is, like, it's this unique take
what about
that
the
they
scene?
Did.
Wait, hold on. What about the scene where she cut her finger off? That wasn't done in post.
Yo, you're right, but this goes back to the point that I was making before. The movie has, the big giveaway wasn't the post violence. I noticed that after the fact. The big thing is there's one single F-bomb.
Oh,
there's one single F-bomb in a PG-13 movie. Every single PG-13 action and or horror movie has one F-bomb. They do it every time. It's like it's a running gag.
Honestly,
and this movie has one F-bomb in it. And then also, PG-13...
Wait, when is the F-bomb? You can't just keep saying it's only got one and then not say when it is.
I'm pretty sure it's John Cho says it.
Okay, cool.
I'm pretty sure John Cho drops it. But it also may have been the detective. I can't remember exactly, but I remember it was one. And it's towards the end of the movie. It's like 3/4 of the way through or a little bit further.
Sure.
And that's probably part of the reason that I noticed it after the fact. I was like, wait a second, there hasn't been any cussing in this movie. That is the first F-bomb. Like, and it just, I was like, this is PG-13, and they changed it. So the other part is, like, yes, there's that violent scene with the fingers, but every PG-13 horror movie has one violent scene. And so that was the one violent scene.
Let me say,
and if it had just had that and not those post-production CG scenes, it would have still been PG-13.
Okay, first of
all... This is a conspiracy theory, by the way. I don't know if they actually did this. It just looks that way to me.
The kitchen scene was not CG, first of all. But
no, it wasn't. I didn't say it was.
I think the reason this movie actually got rated R was because there's so much smoking in it. Like, I don't know if that came before or after their R rating changed, but... there's way too much actual smoking in this movie for it to be rated PG-13. And so, weirdly enough, like, that can make a movie rated R, right? Is showing someone chain-smoking cigarettes and things like that. And so that was what I thought your criticisms were going to be. Is like, the only reason this movie's rated R is because this dude smokes the whole fucking time. Like, that's all.
No, I didn't care about that. I cared about the actual, like, you know, horror parts. And I just thought that... I just never felt like a movie was reversed, where it started out PG-13 and then they tried to make it R. It's almost always the other way because you remove things. Like,
sure,
it's an R-rated movie and you're like, okay, well, let's remove stuff to make it PG-13. This was like more like they tried to like add it in later. They're like, well, this isn't going to sell because this movie sucks, so let's make it R and see if we can get people in the seats.
You should go see it. It's not that bad. The thing I did enjoy, though, in part of it, let's maybe talk about some positive stuff for just a second. I know it's going to hurt, but I just got done watching The Witcher. And I really liked the storytelling in that move in that show. And I will admit right now that a lot of people hated that. You haven't seen it, I know, but they do sometimes like multiple. They like set. It's not like all chronological, so it's kind of like Memento-ish, but a little bit more confusing. And I did like the whole like kind of crazy way they told that story in The Grudge. I thought that was really cool to me. I know that I'm probably one of the only people that liked it, though. I thought it was interesting to tell the story that way, because it was, like, the cop trying to figure out what had happened, and, like, then you get to see, like, little kind of vignettes of horror, like, and I thought that was interesting. Like, I thought that was an interesting way to do it, because in the end, the Grudge movie is kind of boring. Like, it's, like, one or two kills, somebody tries to figure something out, you can never kill these ghosts because you don't know them, and, like, they're ghosts, and the whole point is that you can't defeat them, but there was still, like, a story that was told in The Grudge. And I thought that was a really cool twist on the old ones, because they don't really do anything. Like, none of these movies, these, like, Japanese ghost movies don't do anything. Like, they just are creepy. And that's it.
Well, I didn't like... I feel like the jumping back into different stories just kept resetting the tension. And so I didn't like it from, like, a horror perspective of, like... I just felt like it was never progressing, and I wanted the atmosphere to build, and then, like, I feel like every time they reset, they're like, now this is the family from 4 years ago, and now it's the family from 8 years ago, and I'm like, okay, all right, I get it, they didn't make it, so now can we just get to the part like where they die?
You might have been watching this movie from the beginning, not liking it, and I was watching it excited the whole time, and for something that I didn't ever get, but that made me enjoy it more, because, like, I jumped a lot in that movie, and I was scared, and I'm trying to figure out, like, what, like, who touched you to make you not like the movie?
Oh, I'll defend myself on that. I actually went into it really excited, because I'll admit that, and I can already tell that you don't agree with this at all, and that's fine. The Grudge scared the living crap out of me.
It did me, like, no, it scared me too.
Like, okay, because, like, the first one scared me so much, and so I was actually going into this one going, like, can this bring that back to me? Because I'm so desensitized. I haven't been scared of anything in a long time. Maybe the Grudge can bring it back for me. So I was super excited, and then it was a major letdown for me. And I also feel like, I don't know if you've seen any of the Grudge sequels, the American Grudge sequels.
That's a waste. I would never do that.
I don't know why you would watch a remake then and think that it was not a waste. But
because it's done by the producers of Evil Dead.
It's either the second... You said you didn't know that until after the fact. The second or third...
Well, wait. I'd watched it because you had sold it to me as a movie that was so bad, it was like you could tell in post-production where R was.
And it is bad. And I would beg our fans... And I just pointed out those stuff.
You pointed out some stuff that's subjectively added after the fact. But if you're enjoying the movie and watching it, there's like... I mean, at no point in that movie was I like, I was actively looking for things like that, and I didn't think it was as easy to tell as you made it out to, like, seem. It's like, every that's 5 minutes in this movie, you can see where they use post-production to make it R. It's like, it's not that overt. And you have to also remember, I'm an idiot. So, like, the movie's not meant for you. It's meant for idiots like me who can just enjoy stuff, not ask questions.
Well, what I was going to say is that, like, it's either the second one or the third one. I'm not even sure if they made it to a third one, but if they did, it may have been that one. But there was this one sequel where it basically was like The Ring, where, like, The Ring sequels, it's like, okay, now it's spreading to everybody. And then it was the same thing with The Grudge. It, like, ended up back in America, and it's, like, going through an apartment complex, but it, like, ends up being, like, the twist of the movie that she's, like, haunting this other area, and it's like, oh, crap, she can leave the house. And so this one just took the twist from another movie and tried to make it its own original plot, and that also bothered me. I was like, this isn't even original within its own, like, series of movies, and so you're calling this a remake, and you're ripping off one of the sequels that wasn't all that good to begin with.
See, I think that maybe that's why I want to see what your take on Dr. Sleep is, because
I really want to see Dr. Sleep.
That's why I really like Dr. Sleep, is because it wasn't just, I mean, I didn't know it was claiming to be a remake. I don't really care about that. It doesn't mean anything. A remake is the same thing as a remake. I don't understand why we need multiple re's, but anyway.
Because that just implies the complete unoriginality of it. That's all. That's what I'm saying.
But the cool part, I think, is that not that it's just copying old movies, that it's trying to pull from them and, like, allude to them. Like, there's two camps of thought here. It's not just, like,
but see, I can almost guarantee you that I can almost guarantee you that Dr. Sleep did it well, and The Grudge did not.
See, but I don't agree. Like, I thought that I'd be willing to watch more movies from this universe. Like, I'd watch more Grudge movies from this movie. Like, and I'm,
well,
like,
good luck with that. It did terribly.
No, oh yeah, right. I don't get it. Because of people like you.
I poo-pooed all over it.
So, like, I don't know. Like, I thought it was kind of cool. I liked that they totally went away from the old ghost and they made their own thing. Although, I'll agree that I don't think it was as scary as the original Grudge, that one that scared me. But I did jump at time to time, but, and, like, obviously don't get as scared as I used to anymore when it's not Halloween time and, you know, things can go crazy and murders can come out.
And we're walking across Telluride by ourselves late at night. Yep.
But really, like, I don't know, like, I liked it better than La Llorona, and I thought it was probably better than some of the Annabelle movies, and that, to me, is, like, significant because the James Wan-verse is, like, pretty established, and I don't know. I would have been willing to watch more movies had they made them. But no, it seems like they're not going to.
No. No.
They will. You know they will, because it, like, failed. They're just going to do it to spite you.
Yeah, probably. Just
anyway,
because
we've gone way over, but I hope you guys enjoyed us arguing about The Grudge.
Oh, yeah. We had to do it.
It's going to be one of my top movies of the year. It's my Pet Sematary.
Oh. Oh, I can't handle this. I can't. No, I can't. I'm not ready. I can't. I'm not ready to see Underwater and the Grudge next to each other on your top 10 list at the end of the year. Not ready.
Underwater's not going to be on it.
Oh. It's even worse.
Anyway, thanks for listening, everybody. Sorry if we were talking over each other a lot. We're both very passionate people.
Oh, no, that's the best part.
Especially when Sickle's wrong. We're really passionate when Sickle's wrong. But, actually, I would really like to hear somebody's feedback that's not yours or mine on The Grudge. And see how, like... Because I'll admit, I'm a terrible movie watcher. So, that's known fact. But, anyway... See you next time, everybody.
Alright, well, yeah, we'll see you next time. Hey, you know, don't be so hard on yourself. I'm just too cynical, and you're too excitable. That's all it is.
Don't ever call me excitable.
Somewhere in between the two of us is a good reviewer, I'm sure.
Anyway. I like it. It's a catchphrase. Bye.
I don't get the reference. Okay, bye.